Chairman Hobbins, Chairman Hink, members of the committee. I'm Dave Wilby with First Wind, based in Portland. I have provided some written testimony and materials that will be handed out. Given the hour and the way the committee likes to do business, I certainly won't be reading my testimony. I do want to just draw to your attention a few particular points. I'm happy to answer any questions. I stand up here opposed to the bill as introduced. Which I can hear Representative Van Wee or someone formulating. What do you think about the Dittesheim proposal? We've had an opportunity to talk to Pete about that. Haven't had an opportunity to really think it through. There's some significant complexities, but we're going to engage in further conversations. Be happy to work with the committee, Pete, and other key stakeholders going forward. The comments I will make, though, I would say are applicable to the bill as originally introduced, but also to Pete's bill or any other sort of proposal around tangible benefits. First Wind owns and operates the Marcel project, the Stetson project, including the expansion, the second phase of the Stetson project, which we are building, and by we I mean First Wind with Reed & Reed, currently. We have offices, three offices around the state, and are trying to develop other projects beyond those I've mentioned. Fundamentally, First Wind has no objection to a requirement that new wind projects provide tangible benefits. The law currently requires that. Our projects provide, in our view, significant tangible benefits. A tangible benefit requirement, however, must be a balanced mechanism. To realize some tangible benefits, but in a way that also advances the state's sort of overarching goals of driving toward energy independence, toward fighting climate change, and toward economic growth, which I would include both economic growth and rates as a piece of that. I guess I would say the three sort of tests I would have for a tangible benefit idea, be it Senator Mills, Pete Dittesheim, or anybody else, is it fairly predictable? Is it fair to the communities that are the hosts for these facilities? And finally, is it economically sustainable? You can ask a developer to provide outrageously large tangible benefits. That's not economically sustainable. So it has to be sustainable for all parties. I'm just going to raise sort of two concerns that were initially prompted by the Mills bill. I think they're issues I will still want to think through in the context of the Dittesheim proposal. But first, let me just explain this, the timeline of how a project works. We go into permitting, which takes time, and really come out the other end of the permitting process, we hope, before financing occurs. The financing moment is after permitting. So if we require as part of permitting some sort of substantial economic give at the front end of permitting, and we don't really know the economics of the project until financing occurs after permitting is already ended, there's a sequencing issue here. Is it an insurmountable sequencing issue? Perhaps not, but there is a sequencing issue. The greater the gap between the beginning of permitting and financing, the harder it is to drill down and do tangible benefits in a way that we know is sustainable and works for all parties. Part of the reason of that, and I'll just add sort of tangentially, is the expedited process that we hear so much about, either good or bad, has hit some snags. And those snags are really the appeals that are taking place in the court system, and frankly, the delays in the administrative process that's sort of a result of the appeal threat that's on the back end. In spite of the law, there are some sort of long delays right now, and I'll just cite our Rollins project. It's going to be a year and a half to 2 years. It probably could be over 2 years, in fact, from the date the permit is filed to the end of the permitting process. Now, if expedited means 2 years plus to you all, I mean, we may all have our definition of expedited. That's not my definition of expedited. So there's still some issues out there. It's not fast by any means. So the second issue I'll just raise is we have to be careful and think carefully about a one-size-fits-all approach to tangible benefits, both from the developer's perspective and the community and state's perspective. If we set a standard that's X, and a developer has a project that's a big project, great wind, great economics, that project may be able to bear X plus. We may also have a different project that's small, not very great wind, is okay economically, but not great, and we can't get anywhere near X. So in some cases, you may not get tangible benefits that are really available. In other cases, you could kill a project because the project can't bear it. So that's just something we have to think about as we look at whatever one-size-fits-all ideas are out there. So just a couple quick, there's been a fair amount of discussion about existing tangible benefits. My testimony lays out some of that in detail, but just a couple quick snapshots, just four of them. Mars Hill. $10 million in property taxes over a 20-year period. Maybe that's not substantial to a state senator here, perhaps, but I can assure you, anybody wants to pick up the phone and call Ray Mercereau, the town manager in Mars Hill, and ask him if $10 million of new taxes over two decades is significant. He'll tell you that it is afforded a substantial property tax rate cut in his community. Stetson Project, they handed out the map. 130 main businesses were involved in the construction and development. $50 million spent in the main economy. Here's an important point, and I think it gets to questions that Representative Van Wee and others have asked about how rates can translate, how can we translate into rates. Part of the answer is this committee, some of you very individuals, have already established a mechanism for this. And it's the long-term contracting mechanism. And it has been mentioned quickly by Senator Mills and others, under the terms of the PPA that was approved by the commission last fall, our Rawlins project is going to sell all of its capacity and energy output for 20 years at a significant savings to the ratepayer. Our estimate is $30 to $40 million discount to the ratepayer. Now, it's important to note, I really vehemently disagree, I think, with Senator Mills on this point. He said that a lot of developers are not interested in selling to main consumers. That's just incorrect. This mechanism, this long-term contracting mechanism, is just now, the window is just now open for that in this past year. Rawlins was the very first project. So all those other projects that came before until now, this was not an opportunity. This mechanism was not yet in place. It was in statute, but the rules hadn't worked their way through. The commission had not opened the window yet because they had work to do on it. So now that the window's open, you have a project done. You have other projects that are knocking on the door, and certainly from our perspective, we'd like to do more. So I would caution you not to assume that because one project and one project only from a wind perspective has done a long-term PPA, that's it. This is the first inning, and there's a lot more baseball to be played. I think with that, I will let you, at your own convenience, read testimony. Certainly we'll be here for a work session and available to answer questions now and between now and then. And thank you very much for your attention at this hour.
Thank you very much. Any questions at all, Mr. Wilby? Thank you for your comments.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else who wants to speak in opposition?